Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of the Austin Meyer Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Meyer, and on this show, I interview some of the world's best storytellers in all sorts of genres about how they craft the stories they tell. And today, I'm super excited to have my good friend Max Romy on the show, all the way from Alaska, to talk about filmmaking, to talk about art, and to talk about story. So, Max, thank you so much for joining the show.
Absolutely. Should I, like, because it's a video, should I, like, pop up or something?
Like, there you go. Pop into the screen.
All the visual effects now that we're all stuck inside.
So can you tell me a little bit about the backdrop we're looking at over there right now?
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. All right. So what we're looking at is me not having very good drawer space. So I just kind of, I often organize everything by just throwing it on a wall. So here we've got... These are just some of the paintings that I've made in the last week or so. For a few of them right here, you've got some of the maps for Bus Run Bus.
Okay.
Up here is a poster I'm doing for a bunch of races that were canceled. There's some Golden Trail Series posters for races that were canceled. This is a poster for last time I was in France. A good friend of mine has a running company up there, so I'm making a poster for their company, which is probably hurting right now because of all the travel restrictions. But
yeah,
for
those just listening to the podcast edition, we got a beautiful wall of watercolors behind Max, which you can check some of those out on his watercolor Instagram handle, Trailbound Sketches.
Yeah, and I'll send you copies if you have a website and you want to put them up there too.
Cool.
They awesome. Always do that on like podcasts. They're like, check out our website, the sneaky, you know, hooks in there.
I appreciate it. Cool. So Max, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you got into storytelling?
Yeah, okay. So I live in Alaska. I'm a filmmaker. I've worked for the last couple of years for Solomon Running in particular. It's a cool gig. I travel all around the world chasing like some of the best runners through some of the most beautiful spots on earth. Usually not as fast as they are, but it's a really interesting job, and it all kind of got there with, you know, I always wanted to be a storyteller. Like as a young kid, I loved just good movies, good stories. I think everybody innately has that in them. But I had a really hard time because I'm super dyslexic. So growing up was super rough because I would like, I always thought I wanted to be a writer or something. And I'd put these stories, kind of try to get them out into the universe as any kid does. And like, it felt like I just kept on hitting these walls as people would be like, this isn't spelled right. And it was really it's really rough as a kid to kind of be like stymied by that a little bit. And I was really lucky that my parents were really encouraging, and my grandmother, who is this really great painter, you know, always encouraged us to sketch and draw and be creative in any way we could. So I was, you know, always painting and watercolors and kind of veering away from the words as much as possible, because as a dyslexic, it's not that you can't read, it just doesn't, like, your eyes see everything normally, but it doesn't click in your head. It just doesn't quite connect. So it takes me 3 to 4 times reading something. And so eventually I found film, and it was just this incredible medium where it's like you're able to combine music and story and like visuals, and it's like everything all combined into one. And so I've been doing that for several years, and I've never been fast enough to like be a professional athlete, although I ran in college. I loved it, but I've never been fast enough to be a professional. Mostly I'm just too injured. And I've never been particularly the best filmmaker in the world, or I've never been the best artist in the world, but it's kind of been this beautiful Venn diagram where all these circles just line up, and right in the middle is this sort of new color. And that's kind of the world I've been living in a little bit. And it's this weird mix of trail running and storytelling and filmmaking and watercolors. And it's just really opened up the world to me to be able to kind of tell these unique stories that would be very hard to capture otherwise.
Yeah. For the audience, so Max and I met each other actually I think maybe in 2018, the summer of 2018, we were both at a race, neither of which we were running, which was the Tahoe 200-mile race. So this is a 200-mile ultramarathon that circumnavigates Lake Tahoe, and it's absolutely brutal. It takes multiple days to finish, and Max was out there filming one of the best ultra runners in the world, Courtney DeWalter. And I mean, just to paint a picture for the people about like what this entails to tell the story of a 200-mile race like that. Like, what was that like? Just to give the audience a little sense of what you do.
Right. So like, I am the kind of person who used to think running a 5K was crazy. And then I started running 5Ks. And then I was like, well, at least I don't do marathons because like those people are crazy. And then like I did some stuff close to marathons. And when I started filming to Solomon, it was like, well, at least I don't do 100-milers because those people are nuts. Like marathons, okay, I get it. 100-milers, crazy. This is a 200-mile race. So by the time you run 100 miles, you are halfway done with the race. And this is pretty early on with Solomon, and they're like, oh, go film this Tahoe 200 with Courtney. I really didn't have any idea what I was getting into. I'd filmed Western States 100, which I thought was the longest thing humans could do. But a 200-mile race is they start and they don't stop until, like, you know, they're through 200 miles, and they measure this not in hours, but in days. Like, if you can imagine a race where you're like, oh, well, you know, day two is going to be rough. And this isn't a stage race where it's like, oh, I run, I go to sleep, I rest, I repeat. You're moving constantly for 2 days. Mm-hmm. And if you know how much pain you can go through during a run and how time slows down when you are suffering and they suffer, and then you can kind of, you know, multiply that times days. It's like they are living a lifetime in a few days. And trying to capture the story is really difficult, especially because Courtney decided to make the race really interesting. And she just went out and just set like a record pace. And, you know, not just for like, you know, not just for the women's field, but for everybody. Because, you know, as far as like genders go, like men have more testosterone sometimes. And so it gives them a, you know, an advantage in some of these shorter races. But like the longer you go, the more those advantages disappear. And it really is just who is mentally tough. And Courtney is one of the most mentally tough people in the world. And so she goes out and runs like, I don't want to critique her, but what seemed like a pretty stupid race plan. She just went out hard. And just like, just pedal to the metal. And, you know, if you can imagine, if you go out too hard in a 5K, that's going to hurt. If you, you know, you could suffer for like 30 minutes. But if you go out too hard in a multiple day race, your amount of suffering and your chances of finishing are so like jeopardized. But she went out hard, hit a ton of heat, and just started throwing up and like just suffered the entire way through. Mm. And this was my first experience filming a 200-mile race. And the schematics of filming something like that are really crazy. The schematics of running something like that are nuts. There's aid stations, and you have to know where you're going, and you have to have multiple days, and like toward the end you get pretty trippy, so you got to have people pacing you. Filming is even weirder, because you're capturing you're trying to capture a person from multiple locations. This is a huge loop, but some of the stations you cannot even drive to. And you're having to like try to find this person, and I'm a single person. So it's not like I'm a film crew. It's not like I can have different people at different parts of the course. It is literally just me. And I ended up running, I think it was about 110 miles over the 2 days.
Woo.
Not all at once, but it was like, you know, it was like 20 miles here. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, now I have no car. So I've got to run 15 miles back, or maybe I think I did a 30-mile section once because I did a 40-mile section because I did 20 miles there and then 20 miles back because there's nobody who could give me a ride. And it was brutal. There was just like, I definitely got a little trippy there toward the end as well.
I bet.
But you're just caught up by the feeling of this race and this story. And if you actually want to capture one of these stories, it's 200 miles. And the story is encompassed in this race. And in every step you can take in 200 miles could be the step that changes the race, whether it's the step across the finish line, maybe they trip and fall and break their ankle, maybe they get passed. So at any second in any minute of any day of this 200 mile race could be the minute you have to capture. And the only way to do that is just to kind of be there with them. And so a lot of it was just spending as much time with Courtney as possible, which entailed running 110 miles over the course of that race. Wow. And the result was a video, I can send you a link, but it's a Solomon video. I think it's called The Ultra Addict, because she loves doing ultra so much. And it just happened to be a really crazy race and just really gave me a respect for these races. Because beforehand, I thought like a marathoner was crazy, but now I think like the people who do 200 mile races might be the most grounded people on earth.
Wow, that's super interesting. Yeah, and I remember meeting you when we met, which is at the very at the finish line of that race, because I was just out in Tahoe with some friends and knew the race was going on. So I went out to the finish line to just take some photos of the leaders crossing the finish line. And I remember meeting you at the end and you just looked, I mean, you looked like you had, and you had just run an ultra marathon, a big ultra marathon. I mean, you were like delusional in that moment as well, rightfully so. So you mentioned that you ran in college, and when you decided that you wanted to pursue, you know, filmmaking, why did you decide how did you go into this little niche of this ultra running world? Was that a intentional decision that you made as you saw an opportunity based on your personal skill set and athleticism where that could overlap, or did it kind of just fall into your lap and you went with it?
That's a great question. I wish I was the kind of person who could say I did this very intentionally and I like, you know, did the research and knew that ultra running and filmmaking would give me this really interesting life and skill set, but it was very unintentional. I think a lot of times it's easy to feel hard or down on yourself because, you know, maybe it doesn't feel like you have as much direction as the people on Instagram who like write the really fancy quotes of, you know, this is what success looks like as, you know, they sit on their Ferraris. But I think for most of us, like life is this insane, just hodgepodge of decisions, and they're all binary. It's yes or no, but times millions every single day. And I think where I am right now is to some extent inevitable because it's sort of that North Star that I would love to have gotten to. But I think it's really hard to determine exactly how you're going to get to that North Star. And I think if people have patience and if they have like a, if they're willing to kind of keep on making those decisions, they'll end up there. But the path is going to meander in all kinds of ways. And this is just what happened to me. Mm-hmm. I used to wish that I could be like an Olympian or something, as a lot of athletes do. You, like, how cool would that be to be like competing with the, you know, hanging out with these incredible athletes and like on the stage with all the cameras and being allowed to just go under the rope that says, you know, nobody else go here. And I'm super lucky in that, like, I have that. I'm not one of these top athletes. I'm pretty good on my feet, but I'm not competitive, but I still have like accidentally stumbled into this way that allows me to go under that rope that other people aren't allowed to go under. Right. And I get to hang out with these really cool athletes and I get to run with them and I can be there. Mm-hmm. But it's sort of this backdoor entrance. Mm-hmm. And storytelling, I think, can really do that for a lot of people because it just gives you this skeleton key. And it says, like, you know, it gives you the skeleton key that unlocks the courage and the excuse to go chase down, like, the stories you've always been curious of.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me a little bit of, so I played soccer at Stanford. And when I finished my soccer career, I was like, man, the only thing I want to do is play professionally, and gave it my best effort to play in the MLS and just wasn't quite at that level. And my first job out of Stanford was working as a videographer at the LA Times. And the first assignment that I was put on was to cover the LA Galaxy, which was the Los Angeles MLS team. Uh-huh. And when I first went out there, I thought, oh, this is going to be like the dream assignment. I'm covering soccer. I'm going to be down on the field level. And what I realized, and it kind of hit me hard that summer, was I found myself on the sideline filming all these people who I still wished I was. You know what I mean? Like, I was filming these people who I'd just played against in college, who I'd grown up playing against in youth soccer. And that was like a very tough summer because I realized that like I hadn't given up the dream of being a professional soccer player yet. And I felt like so much tension that summer and had to even like tell my editors at the LA Times, like, hey, I would love to cover some non-soccer things, because there was still a lot of like personal angst that I had to work through to be able to be present and excited about doing those stories. Did you ever kind of feel that when you went from, you know, running in college to filming this, or by the time that you started filming, was that in the past?
That's a great question. I think the beauty of like the running and filming is that I have to do the sport in order to be there. I mean, I film from the sidelines, but very often I film from the trail itself. You know, right. It would be as if like you weren't filming from the sidelines, you're out there running with the refs.
Right.
And this just happens to be an interesting kind of sport where it's like, you know, sometimes that will get you DQ, but oftentimes the race directors are really cool and they understand the need for content. And filming runners from the sidelines just doesn't get it. And that's something that I experienced a lot, is like, for me, I want to make the movie that I want to see. So if it already exists, you know, maybe it's fun, like kind of recreating it. But I think the real, what would the word be? Like the real motivation in so much of this is I want to create the work that doesn't exist that I am excited to watch. And that's a lot how I got started in Alaska, is like, you know, right outside my window, there's these beautiful mountains. And I remember getting into trail running in high school and being so excited to like, I wanted to learn everything about it. And I watched the Solomon TVs about, you know, France and England and all these places all over the world. But there's nothing about running in Alaska. And so eventually I just like kind of not got fed up, but I got fed up and I went outside with a camera and it was janky, but I kind of made the sort of film that I wanted to see. And that just opened the floodgates. Mm-hmm. And with running, so much of the footage was just from the sidelines. It was like, here's the runner, boom, gone. Here's the runner, boom, gone. And that perspective is just, you know, that of a spectator. And what I wanted to see the perspective of is the, you know, what are these people feeling? What is life through their eyes? Like that feeling of a race, because in the Tahoe 200, with these people running 200 miles, they're never still. At no point, unless they're like injured, do they, you know, have to sit there and turn their head as person, you know, zips by them and they're still. They are just constantly moving, and that running is such a movement-based sport. And just to be able to bring people into that mindset was really important. And I think it's the same with like anything, is, you know, if you want to tell a good story, you got to bring them there however you know how.
Totally. I a couple months ago I did my first of those like masterclass courses. You've probably seen the advertisements for them on like YouTube. I did the Jimmy Chin adventure photography class. And he talked about
notes.
I'll give them to you. He talked about getting into adventure photography, and specifically around climbing. And I see a lot of parallels here between your story, because like you had the athleticism to get unique access to tell the stories. And unique access is like the point at which someone goes from like an okay storyteller to a really great storyteller. And the same thing with Jimmy Chin. Like, he could climb places that no one else could climb. And he also had the camera skill set to document that. But he said that when he was getting started and looking for people whose work he wanted to emulate, I can't remember the photographer's name, but he said there was one photographer that, like, when he looked at that person's work, he felt like he was on the expedition with them, because he could do every single move with a camera. And I think that people like you, people who are with Solomon TV, even people like the Ginger Runner and Billy Yang, and some of these, like, you know, filmmakers in the ultra running space, which I love as an ultra runner, I think that's becoming, you know, more and more of the content that's popping is people who have that capability to really make you feel like you're in that race yourself. So,
Well, so, and it's like, I think you're hitting on it in that it's not, I mean, being able to run and keep up is important, but drones can do that. I think what is so key with storytelling, and that, you know, any storyteller should really focus on, is that it is, in order to tell a story, you have to like be able to live it inside before you capture it outside.
So break that down. Break that down for us.
Break it down. So like Jimmy Chin is an unbelievable climber. So he can get to those angles and he can film those climbers that, you know, would be really hard to capture. But if he wasn't a climber, I don't even think it would matter if he had those skills, because he understands that mentality of the story of the people he's trying to capture. He understands that language. And it's the same with running. It's like, I feel like as a runner, you know, obviously my feet help me take that place to, you know, like I can take the camera to the runner. But I think way more importantly is just by virtue of being a runner, I think I understand their mindset a little enough to be able to tell that story of a runner. And I think that's something that a lot of people have and don't realize. You know, there's people out there who say, I can't be a storyteller because I don't have a $50,000 camera, or I don't have, you know, film school or something like that. But everybody has this really unique set of skills that maybe they don't even realize because it's just hiding in plain sight. And everybody is this Venn diagram of like unique experiences. Maybe there's a million, you know, you think your first circle, like you imagine a big circle, there's got to be like, with all the cell phones and everything, there's got to be close to a billion filmmakers in the world, you know, just people who can operate a camera. But then of those, maybe only, you know, here's another circle, there's like a billion runners. But you put those together, there's only like half a billion who can do both. And then you put another circle in there of like people who can tell a good story. And all of a sudden you're down to like, you know, a certain amount of million. And then you throw in people who live in North America. And then you're down to even smaller. And then people who, you know, who can do watercolors. And then boom, all of a sudden you're down to like seven. And then people who, you know, who are willing to suffer for 2 days to get a story. And then, you know, you're down to two. And then of those two, random chance is going to interfere and then give one person that. So it's like everybody has this incredible Venn diagram of skills. And I think a lot of it is just seeing those for what they are and embracing them and not being afraid that you're not the best or you're not like the fastest, because none of us are. But you are unique in your own way. And you can tell a story that nobody else can. And sometimes the trick is just not to let that story hit you, but to go find it.
I love that. And I think what you also hit on is that if people out there are thinking about what's the unique skill set I had or I have, as you were saying, it's like skill set, but also life experience as well. If you have a unique life experience, maybe that's an opportunity to tell your own story, but that unique life experience also might give you access, again, that word, to the mentality of someone else who's going through a similar experience. So I'd encourage people who are out there listening who want to become better storytellers to do some reflection on what are those things that are both your passions, your skill sets, and also reflect on your life experiences. Max, I'm also curious about the structure of telling stories in the ultra running space. And I ask that because a lot of videos out there about running follow a very similar formula. You have like, here's this elite athlete who is really fast. Let's film him or her the day before the race, getting ready. They run the race and then they cross the finish line and it's over. And those can be super entertaining. However, if every story is like that, then the audience starts to tune out. So how do you think about switching up the structure of this linear race in terms of the way that you tell stories to bring some nuance, to bring some other aspects out of these characters or whatever it is, because I think that your work does that.
I'm glad to hear you think so. sometimes I doubt myself, like right up until the last bit of a project. The way I like to film a story is terrifyingly unpredictable. I think the bosses don't like it, the sponsors don't like it, but it results in good, it, you know, in some good stories. But it's because life is super, super, super crazy. And to capture a good story, I think personally, I like it to emulate that. I like to make the stories I like to see, and I don't like the Disney-esque, very predictable ones, because that's not how life is, you know? Like, we each get to these places we are by all these crazy random chance, and the only way you can film that is by just letting it happen. So for me, it's like, yeah, you know, every story does really follow that pre-race, race itself, end of race, or like story structure. You have like the beginning, the change, the end. And for me, it's just like letting those last two be total wild cards. You have your place you start, and then you just kind of see where it takes you. And that can be a really scary process because, you know, it's easy to fight it. It's like an avalanche or something, you know? You yeah. want to fight it, but I guess the trick with avalanches is you kind of swim with it. Mm-hmm. It gets you to the top. So that's, you know, put that in like non, like metaphorical terms. What that looks like a lot is not knowing where it's going to end, but just trusting the story and kind of seeing what comes out. So yeah. with Courtney, you know, there's this Tahoe 200. It's this big, 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 long race. And I had no idea what was going to happen. We get there, and instead of the story about, you know, maybe like her crushing the record or her doing something, you know, that she planned on, all of a sudden she goes out and she just like runs this like really, really questionable race strategy. But she's in front, and like 100 miles in, she's still in front. And there's this other person who's like chasing her down now. And like, that's when the story took shape. So for an entire day and like 100 miles, it was kind of like no clue where the story's going. But the beauty of stories is like, it's how you get there that's interesting. And like really investing and just being present in that and just allowing yourself to kind of go with the chaos. You're either going to have a good time or you're going to have a good story. So when things go horribly wrong, great. Like, that's, for me, it's like, all right, cool. The story has begun. And there's usually a moment in every filming where it's like, here's our story. Like, all right. And it's usually after something terrible happens.
Yeah.
So even like what's going on right now. I mean, I had this big, big plan for this huge, like, cross Alaskan, like, journey that we were going to be taking. It was going to kind of combine Alaska and running and climate change and all this stuff. And then a huge pandemic throws everything up in the air. And all of a sudden, now I've got a real story. Because now I can combine what's going on right now with a pandemic that caused the Iditarod race in 1925 when like all the kids got diphtheria and they had to put serum on a sled dog trail, like a sled dog relay, and get it 1,000 miles. And like, there's the story. So it's kind of this weird mix where you just got to have a confidence that the story is going to come and like trust yourself. And a lot of that only happens after, you know, lots of failure and lots of, you know, lots of times when it didn't work out. But eventually, you know, you can feel confident enough to get to that start line with a camera in hand and just know that the story's somewhere out there, and not knowing kind of opens up your eyes to what could happen.
Yeah. And this is why being comfortable improvising is one of the most essential skill sets for someone who does documentary filmmaking, because it often is the case where you do have to have some semblance of a plan of like how this story is going to go, especially if you're pitching a story to like a news organization, editorial outlet. I'm sure even when you are working with different running brands, you kind of have to have a say of like, this is the story we're going to film. It might look like this, to give them some image in their head of like, okay, what am I investing money into? However, there has to be an understanding between that team and of you as the filmmaker, as very likely it's not going to play out that way. And in that moment where that change happens, again, another moment where people go from being like good storytellers to great storytellers, is if you can accept that when that change happens, when the plan goes awry, if you can accept that mistake as a gift and utilize it to take it in stride. And to ground that in another example of your work, Max had just had another great video come out with Solomon and Solomon TV, I think today or yesterday. yesterday.
Who knows of the pandemic? Like, time doesn't matter anymore. Like, last week, I don't know. Maybe it was today. I think, well, time and France doesn't matter. I believe it came out today.
Yeah. So I'll let Max tell you a little bit about this story, but I think it does a great job of illustrating what we've been talking about, which is, you know, being okay with change when that throws off the story you had planned and accepting that as a gift and utilizing it to make the story better. And then also what we were just talking about around not just the normal narrative of like a race that has a start, a middle, and a finish, but actually taking a unique angle of exploring the culture of trail running from a different, just a different angle. So do you want to tell them a little bit about this project?
Yeah. Okay. So this had a pretty simple premise. It was a video pitched by Ricky Gates, who's this awesome athlete. He's like run across the U.S. He's kind of like the Forrest Gump meets Hunter S. Thompson times like, you know, a guy with a mullet who's a trail runner. He's a cool dude. And he's like, what if we put 24 strangers on a bus and go 2,000 miles in 7 days and run like 6 or 7 insane national parks? And he made it happen. And so these 24 people got on a bus and we were going to basically run and then, you know, run all day long, eat some dinner, get on the bus. And then these two bus drivers would relay, you know, sleeping and driving. And then you'd wake up somewhere completely different. Like, you know, we started in San Francisco, then went to Yosemite and then to Zion and kind of, you know, all the way around ending back in San Francisco. And the story seemed pretty simple. I was going to capture that, but also you never know what's going to happen. And so everything was going pretty well. The people on the bus were paying customers. So that was the first hiccup where I couldn't really film them as much, but everything was going pretty well and having a good time. And then like 3 days in, we're at Zion, which is this insanely beautiful, huge, like giant canyons. I had a film permit that was like hopefully going to be set up with everything. And like a day or two before, we learned that the film permit was getting rejected because they didn't want people running in these parks. And Ricky's bus running permit was getting rejected. And he might get kicked out of the park because they didn't want groups running in the park. I think it was like a lot of miscommunication, but it's their park. I can't control it. So basically, like the two most beautiful parks and like the most anticipated parks in the entire trip just got like axed. You know, no right. filming, no running. And I am there as a filmmaker to make a film about a running trip. And we cannot film or run in these parks. It's like two out of the seven, the most beautiful ones, there you go, trip is done.
Gone.
And
yeah.
That's definitely what I was feeling for a while. It's like, oh, great. Like, there goes my job. Great. This is going to be rough. I am lucky in particular because I've been able to, you know, I paint a lot. I sketch a lot. It's a really fun tool. And in this contract, they're like, you cannot film, you cannot run. And they said nothing about painting. Like, there was no watercolor clause in there. I think there rarely is a watercolor clause, but like I took full advantage of that. And so instead of filming in these beautiful spots like Angel's Landing, I went up and took a sketch pad and made these paintings of these places. Like, here we go. This is a picture of Yosemite and, you know, kind of like the light and everything that's going by these. And I was able to kind of make these sketches and these paintings of these places and then use those in lieu of actual footage. Obviously, it's only like, you know, a couple minutes of paintings because it's not an animation, it's a film, but it did the trick. And I think it made for a more interesting film at some way.
And then, you animated those watercolors, which had a really cool effect in the film.
Right. Yeah. No, it's super simple. Like, once again, yeah. I mean, so like the watercolors themselves are fun. The effect is called parallax. And it's basically just breaking them up and making them move a little bit slower by each other. So it worked. It did the trick. And then the scary part is you have all these pieces and it's like, can you make a story that works out of that? And it's one thing to film it and then it's another thing to edit it. And that's like where there's definitely some tense moments where the people I was sharing it with maybe didn't quite see the same vision that I saw and were like a little bit concerned. Mm-hmm. They were a lot concerned like I was making a piece of trash. But, you know, it comes together right at the very end. And it's just like one of these watercolors, is they, like a good watercolor doesn't look good until maybe like the last 2%. It's like, it's these weird washes and it doesn't feel right. And like maybe stuff kind of gets all over the place. But then like the last 3 or 4 brush strokes just tie everything together. And so if you're watching this painting, you're like, well, this is a ruined thing. And then the last couple strokes, just everything comes right together. And it's the exact same with films often. The difference between what feels like a mediocre film and what feels like a really good film can be in the last edit. And a lot of it is you just have to have trust in that process that it, things might be going crazy, but like just stay calm. And, you know, they always say, don't say you can fix it in post, but you can fix it in post because there's never an excuse not to tell a story because creativity is the best patch. And I personally love like pants with holes in them because fun, colorful patches just make for a better pair of pants. So that's sort of what happened in this. The video, you know, I kind of like tied it all together with this theme about time and time travel and Einstein's theory. And I think it turned out pretty okay.
Yeah, I loved that. I loved that theme. And I think that was another, that's another way, right, that we, that the film and the journey becomes about more than just a group of strangers running a long distance and having fun. I had a guest on my podcast early last year who talked about there being like kind of like these three levels of story. And the last one, which is kind of like, what does this mean about like the world? What does this mean? It's like, if you zoom out, like, why does this story matter for everyone? And that's one of the things that I thought you were trying to do there with that theme, talking about like the concept of time and how time passes. It's something that even if we weren't on that bus ride and on this big adventure, we can learn from that little takeaway that you drove home in that story, which I thought was really cool. So another thing I messaged you about after I saw that video was just about how much coverage you get as a one-man team. So as you mentioned, you're covering 200-mile races. You're doing this bus run bus where you're driving all over the country and everyone's scattering, running in different directions. And you have to some way cover all of this using multiple cameras just alone. And I think there's a lot of people out there, especially who listen to this show, who are, you know, young filmmakers, young journalists who don't have the budgets or support to have big full teams. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for people who are just trying to make it work as a one man, one woman operation and tell stories that feel like there's so much breadth within them.
That's a good question. I guess I never really thought of like that aspect. I think there's definitely a lot of us out there, you know, the single person groups. When you see in the credits, it's like filmed, edited, produced, sounded by, you know.
Yeah.
Like when you have like one or two names in the credits, you know you're one of those. But yeah, like a lot of the filmmaking is just done by me, and I think it makes for a more streamlined story in a lot of ways. I won't pretend like it's ideal. Often I would love if there was 2 or 3 people. And it is very hard to relax when it's just one person, because you know that if you're not getting the shot, nobody's getting the shot.
Right.
So often just like having another person there, even if they don't really get anything worth taking, it just takes the pressure off. But it does, there is no excuse not to capture a good story. You know, maybe it won't be as full of a story, or maybe you're going to miss a couple of the shots. There's a lot of times that Courtney did something really incredible or amazing, and I just wasn't ready with the camera during that 200-mile race. But the trick was I was present and I was there for enough of it that I was able to capture and piece those things together. And the tragedy is like only I will know what happened and what the viewers won't see.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be super rough for the person making the film, but the viewers are very forgiving because of ignorance. Like they will never see the spot where Courtney just like, you know, was running, stopped, hands on knees, threw up, And then just got back up and kept on running because she like conveniently did not throw up when I had the camera rolling, which she probably would not like, you know, people to know or see. But like, you know, I was there for enough of it to capture enough of it to make this really interesting film. And in post, you can always edit to what you have. And I think it probably stops a lot of people. I know it certainly stopped me. I'd say maybe half the projects I've ever done have a counterpart that never got completed or never even got filmed because I feared I just didn't have enough.
Yeah.
And if I could give myself any advice in the past, it would just be like, just make the damn film. Like, don't worry if it's not perfect. Don't worry if you don't have everything. Just make it and you can scale it down. Maybe you could have made an incredible 50-minute film, but you don't have the footage. That's fine. Just make a 5-minute film and just get it out. Get the thing that you can, get it out there, because it keeps on building on itself. Mm-hmm. And you know, as a one-person film team, it's you know, one day I'd love to be able to work with lots of people, but for right now, I'll do the best I can by myself until I'm at that point. And I think sometimes that's all you can do, but it's, you know, so long as it's constant forward progress, as Courtney and Kevin kept on telling each other during the 200-mile race. Even when they were walking, they were like, constant forward motion, constant forward motion. And, you know, when you're a one-person film crew, you don't always move very fast, but, like, so long as you're moving in the right direction, you're still moving in the right direction.
Right. And another, so, you know, I work mostly in that capacity these days as well. Making all my own stuff, and something that I saw you doing and that I try to think about when I'm making my films as a one-person team is variety of shot types. So you know, that means getting your zoom lens on and getting super tight. It means backing away and getting, you know, getting a bunch of different angles and perspectives, different types of lenses, if you have them, to give it that feeling that this is like, oh my God, there's like a big crew here. There's like, you know, there's so many different perspectives. So I think as a one person team, always be thinking about differentiating between shots and angles. And Max did that in his piece. I mean, he's rocking GoPro footage, drone footage, like super close up to people's feet running, you know, interview shots on the nicer cam, you know, just all these different types of shots can create the feeling for the audience, and they might not even be aware of it, of the scale of the story and the scale of the production.
Right. Well, I mean, like, you know, the beauty of running is that, you know, you have two free hands while you do it, and a camera only takes up one, so you may as well double fist it. So, you know, kind of balance yourself out. You've got like the Sony in one hand and the GoPro in the other, and then like during the Tahoe 200, I think, what did I have? I had the Sony in one hand, which is about 7 or 8 pounds, so it's still runnable with, and then I had a GoPro, which got that wide angle, and then in my backpack I'd have a drone, and then a small little Sony, you know, zoom camera or something. And they're all pretty cheap too. Like, I know a lot of people say, oh, you need like, you know, the $50,000 full frame, you know, 200 frames per second, great color space or whatever. But if the runner runs by and that camera's in your car, like the camera in your hand is what matters. And so for me, it's like I buy cheap cameras that get the job done, that I'm not afraid to break. So like, well, I mean, what this is resting on, like, this is, you know, my current tripod for my phone, but, you know, this is a Sony A64. Yeah, Sony A64. Okay. And you know, it's a good camera. It's not cheap by any means, but it's my fifth, because I keep on just crushing them, you know, getting good shots. And that's kind of what it takes. And I would, I just babied the big fancy cameras. Like, I'd have like one big fancy camera that was like $5,000, and no way I was going to let it, you know, get in harm's way. But with these ones and insurance, it's like, all right, good luck camera. Let's see if you can stay number five for a while.
So I know that you now are kind of transitioning work-wise and the projects that you're doing. You talked about doing this project in Alaska this year, which I believe is a personal project. Did I lose your video?
There we go. We're back. There we are.
So in this time of you personally transitioning and the world transitioning into this weird pandemic self-isolation moment, how are you kind of flexing those storytelling muscles and staying creative in this time? And how are you looking at the next few months to continue creating and developing your skill set?
Good question. With filmmaking, you have this unbelievable opportunity in today's day and age to reach a huge amount of people. There are only so many filmmakers, and content is hugely available. And so as a filmmaker, you kind of have the power in your hands. And so for me, I had this really cool opportunity where I was traveling all around the world. And so actually a couple months ago, I made the decision that I was actually going to stick closer to home in Alaska, and I wanted to make stories here in my home, you know, as an Alaskan. That's just one more of those circles on that Venn diagram of, you know, things that make you unique, you know, uniquely positioned to tell a story, especially. And I wanted to be able to kind of use those in my home and my community to be able to tell stories that mattered here. And so with what I'm going to be doing in Alaska, you know, lots of people have made great stories in Alaska, but as somebody who lives here, I want to make the story that I want to see. I don't want to see reality TV about bears and all that stuff. Like, they exist, but that's not what Alaskans care about. So I'm going to make this story that ties this crazy history with these, you know, really digging a little deeper into my home. And being a local, you get this little advantage. You know, it's kind of like being a runner filming a running race, being a local filming a story in your backyard. You're willing to put that extra time in. You're willing to dig deeper. You're willing to, like, make that story better. And I think there's some really crazy stories out here that are going to have some global appeal that will be able to reach people in a really crazy way. And you want to talk about unpredictability, Alaska's king of that. You never know what could happen. Like, maybe this is a story about the Iditarod. Maybe this is a story about me getting mauled by a moose. I don't know. Right. We'll find out. But it's I think I used to feel that I was going to change the world, and I was going to do it by making stories of, you know, me going to Kenya or like Nova Scotia or somewhere, you know, somewhere foreign that I could come in and tell this story that would change their lives. But they have people there that are going to tell stories that will change their lives, and they'll do it better because they're from there. And it might seem like it's not as exciting because we live in these places, but if you tell a story in the place you're from, you can be part of a global solution, because global problems have local solutions. A global problem is just a problem that happens to every local community, right? And so in the same way, these big global problems have local solutions, and stories are often the first part of that solution. Is you need to capture a story that gets people intrigued and excited to find out more and to engage locally. And that's exactly what I plan to do here. And I really hope that this pandemic and this, you know, this tragedy can have a silver lining, in that it forces people to sit locally and appreciate what is going on right now, and to really invest into that community that they are at, because they will know those stories deeper and better than any well-funded film company that comes into your community to try to make a story. The single person film team that's local will be able to do it better. And I believe that 100% of the time. And so I personally am really excited to get going here. And I can't wait to see the stories that other filmmakers are making locally while they're stuck at home as well.
I love it. So before we wrap up the show with our final question, Max, where can people find you and your work?
In Alaska. No, or online. People can find me on just Trailbound Sketches on Instagram, or on, I think, Max Romy, like at Max Romy. I'm not very good at like sharing the work, so I'll send you some links, but a lot of it is on Solomon. A lot of the Solomon TVs coming out this year will be ones that I'm in the process of creating. And then the Trailbound Alaska project will be coming out shortly. It's not like open yet, but like stay tuned I can just tell your audience now, like, the website's not completed, but trailboundalaska.com will be able to explore more about that.
Beautiful. And the last question that I end every show with, we talked a lot about storytelling today, but if we wanted to leave the audience with one last tip for those people who want to become better storytellers, what would you say?
Okay, my better tip?
Better tip. All your tips were great. But one last tip.
My last tip?
The thing you want to leave people with
right.
on, you know, as they go out into their
lives. And well, homes. my last tip is, like, you know, for being a better storyteller is you're already halfway there. Like, you just by on the basis of you being you are a more unique story. You are a more unique you than anybody else out there. And you can tell a really, really incredible, unique story better than anybody out there, no matter how much experience or film equipment they have. You just need to find out what that story is. And it might take 5, 10, 15, 20 tries. You might not even know what that story is until you've already filmed it. But we are each these incredible, unique Venn diagrams of storytellers. And nobody can tell that story better than you can. So don't be afraid that you're not good enough or that you don't have the right equipment or that you're not going to get there, because you are already halfway there just by the life experiences you've already had. So don't be afraid that you're going in the wrong direction, because no matter what direction you go, you're going in the right one.
Boom. That's a great way to end the show. Max Romy, thanks so much for joining the show. Everyone else out there listening or watching the episode on YouTube and Facebook, go show him some love. Go hit up his social media accounts. Again, that's Max Romy and Trailbound Sketches for all his amazing watercolors. Max, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thanks, Austin.